The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Much of what you hear on the following program may be shocking and upsetting to you. But if you will listen calmly and with an open mind, you may discover the key to the peace of mind and joy for which you've been searching all of your life.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
And here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
That's gonna be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening? Hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English! Do you speak it?
Yes!
Then you know what I'm saying!
Yes!
And welcome, everyone, to the Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. Glad to be with you today. Got a lot coming up on the show. John Mullen from NBC Sports Chicago will join us talking about the Bears and the Carolina Panthers coming up this Sunday. The Packers, they have the New Orleans Saints with Brett Hundley as their quarterback this week as Aaron Rodgers goes down to a collarbone injury. And unfortunate for the Packers, but we'll see what Hundley has in the tank. You know, he has been on the bench for the last 2 years. This is his third year. He studied under McCarthy and Rodgers throughout that period of time. He should be prepared to be in this situation. Joe Callahan will be his backup. We'll see what happens there. Let's hear from Brett now about him being the starting quarterback for the Packers.
I think, you know, it's the same. We're going to keep what we do best, and that's playing this offense. You know, obviously, being the starting quarterback now, just like Aaron when he was, you know, he had a lot of choices on what he wanted to do, how he wanted to do it, and same with me. You know, the coaches are doing a really good job with the game plan, and happy for it. Ready.
What was that meeting with Mike like last night to go through that? What was that process like for you? Have you ever been through that before?
No. There's a lot of stuff new. You guys here at my locker, meeting with Mike last night. So, you know, it's all new. And I'm adjusting, just going with it. My focus is just staying focused. Keep the main thing, play football, have fun.
Now let's hear from Jordy Nelson on working with Hundley throughout the week and what he expects.
I mean, it's a little different, but unfortunately we've experienced it before. So if it's him just missing a day or so or whatever it is. So I think it's been great to have Brett in there the past couple years. So it's nothing, something new. He's been in the huddle. He knows our offense. He knows how to communicate. He understands the nuances in all of it. So I think that's a big positive of going into this situation, and we'll continue to grow.
Jordy, because of that, do you feel that the QB room, the situation of backup is better than it was in 13 when you guys went through this?
Yeah, I would think so. I think obviously Seneca and Scott did a great job when they were here, but I think they were here for 5 weeks before it happened or something like that, compared to Brett being here already 2 full years and what he has this year. So he's been through 3 training camps. Obviously that's a lot of time in this building, in the meeting rooms, with Aaron, with Alex, with Mike, all of us. So I think that's a big positive right there moving forward.
All right, a lot coming up on the show. Steve Leventhal went to Hallis Hall. He will join us next. And then John Mullen, NBC Sports Chicago. John Poulter later in the program talking baseball, hockey, and soccer. And also fantasy football with Mike Perlow. Coming up on the Sports Report.
This is Bart Shore, and I want to invite you to visit InternetFM.com. This great site has online stations streaming rock music 24/7, hundreds of podcasts with on-demand music, sports, and talk programs. Also get daily features, music news, and useful links. Our radio stations have limited or no commercials at all. InternetFM.com. It's totally free. No sign-up required. If you love music, then InternetFM.com is for you. Also on Facebook at InternetFM.
Hello again, everyone. This is yours truly. That's right, Howard Cosell back again. The mind clear, the body agile, talking to the likes of Pack-A-Dave. Pack-A-Dave, it's time to get over it. That's right. Meredith was right, Pack-A-Dave. The Green Bay Packers were lucky. That's right. And yours truly is here once again to tell it like it is, even though I say the greatness of Vincent T. Lombardi and Fordham U and the seven blocks of granite were the greatest team of all time.
That's not the real Howard Cosell, by the way. And how can the Packers be lucky? They lost their starting quarterback. So a lot of that, it's going to be big trouble for the Packers unless Hundley really plays well. Now, Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting in Chicago. He goes to Hallis Hall each week. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, you remember that guy? We saw him at Radio Row for one of the Super Bowls. He was like totally decked out, you know, in the ABC, the Monday Night Football jacket. He's wearing the Coke bottle glasses. He was cool.
I might have been. I do not. I don't remember. Long time ago. All right. So the Bears get a win against the Ravens in overtime last week. And let's hear what you got from Hallis Hall.
Right. Well, of course, they were pretty elated about the whole thing and the continued development of Mitch Trubisky. So John Fox, in his press conference, he was asked to preview the Carolina offense and defense.
Yeah, obviously, it starts with the quarterback. He's big, he's physical, he's strong, he can make all the throws. They've got two tall receivers. I think they got a pretty good 1-2 punch as far as their back tandem. Jonathan Stewart, I'm very familiar with. We drafted him there a while back. Christian, he's McCaffrey. He's a little bit like how we use Tariq, so they use a lot of the same packages. They do run an option element to their game. We're going to have to be really sharp as far as in plastering and coverage as well as in how we contain the quarterback because he is a good scrambler. He's one of their top rushers. Defensively, I think they're top five statistically. They haven't had a lot of interceptions. I think they've had one less than we have. But they've gotten sacks, and they're really good on third down. Kicking game-wise, they've got a real strong kicker. Basically, I think they've had one returnable kick so far in six games. But a good football team. And it's going to come down to really who executes best, and that's how it always is.
Also, Mitch Trubisky was asked about the defense he's going to face, so he gave his opinion on the Carolina defense that he's going to be facing.
They're really smart. They're fast. They run to the ball. They know how to mix it up. They're good at pressuring the quarterback. They get after it with the front seven, and they're really solid on the back end. They really don't make many mistakes. They keep it in front, and like I said, they rally to the ball really quick. So you rarely see any blown coverages or things of that nature, and they get off the ball really, really well, and they're good on third down. So that's just areas we need to get better in.
And then lastly, Dave, if I might add, one of the things I didn't get a cut of, but it was kind of an interesting discussion, was they were asking about Julius Peppers because he's coming back to play here, and he was originally drafted by Carolina. And one of the things that Fox talked about was they were maligned for that trade originally because they said there were some quarterbacks available, and one of the names he mentioned was Joey Harrington. But I think since Peppers is a certain Hall of Famer, they turned out all right for them.
Is Harrington not a Hall of Famer?
Maybe in the Oregon Hall of Fame.
All right. Well, let's hear from Coach Ron Rivera of the Carolina Panthers on playing at Soldier Field.
I had 17 years there, and 14 of it was coaching and playing. So it's pretty exciting to go back for us. And Courtney was born there, so it's a neat experience for us. We could get rain, we could get snow, we could get sleet. I mean, anything's possible there. I mean, the wind shifts and it comes from the north and you get a little Arctic blast coming down. Temperature will drop real fast and you'll get some snow, so who knows?
Now, from Comcast Sports Chicago, he covers the Bears for them. His name is John Mullen. John, how are you today?
Good morning, guys. Pretty well. Nice fall day.
Okay, and you have been covering the Bears in Chicago since when?
Well, contrary to public belief, not since they were wearing leather helmets, but about a quarter of a second. Mike Ditka's last year was my first, which was one of those, oh, my God, what have I got myself into kind of years. But, yeah, that 92 was the first year on the beat. So Larry Mayer of the Bears and I are the longest tenured guys on the Bears.
Hey, Dave, those were the days when Bob Greenberg went to some of those press conferences.
Yep.
Well, exactly.
Yep. Good memory.
And that would have been the late 80s. And Steve, you've been covering him since the early 90s, so you're not too far behind, right?
Yeah, I can actually say I did go to press conferences back over when they were at Lake Forest College with Dave Wannstedt. And of course, as I mentioned, one of the old other old timers is always used to say, "Oh, the kids played hard." That was his big thing, right?
Yeah, 92 was the first. Last year was 92.
Okay, all right, John. Well, now the Bears have two wins, both of them coming in overtime. First, your thoughts on the game last week?
Because there were so many little aspects to it. The number one thing is, okay, how'd the rookie play? Because that's the franchise. So Mitch Trubisky only throws 18, well, you know, called 20 pass plays. Four times he got sacked, so let's take that to the offensive line in their meetings. But he threw and completed 8 of 16 and threw 6 passes away. So he's making better decisions, which is really, that is the single biggest reason why they went to him over Mike Glennon, because Glennon was making just abominable decisions. So the development of Trubisky was a big thing. Obviously, the turnovers for a team that had zero interceptions to get two of them and take one of them to the house was epic, because that is the hallmark of a great defense. Not that they're anywhere near great, but their statistics are good again in terms of yardage. So have they turned a corner? I think that's what I most want to see against Carolina, because Joe Flacco's interception percentage was the highest of his career, is up to over 4%. And Cam Newton's having the same kind of year. So if they can get any kind of pressure and keep Cam from running, can they keep up that takeaway process? Because their chances of winning when they lose the turnover ratio, almost none. But.
Okay, John, is this about where you thought the Bears would be at this point in the season? I have to say I thought they'd probably be 1-5, but so it's close. But is this where you thought they would be? And did you think that Trubisky would be at the quarterback slot at this point in the season, before the season started?
Actually, yes. I'd say probably yes to both. And in fact, I'd have to look back at my exact predictions. I thought they would win one of the first four. I didn't know which one, and you go broke trying to pick upsets. So it wasn't, oh, they'll beat the Steelers. No, there was none of them. You're going to pick them to win. But I thought they would come out of the first quarter of the season 1-3. They'd somehow steal one, and they did. After that, you know, now we're in the second quarter. With Minnesota, I'm pretty sure I would have thought they would have beaten Minnesota just because that quarterback situation. So this is probably where I thought they'd be record-wise. I just wasn't sure which game they would win. I thought they might lose in Baltimore because I thought Joe Flacco would be a little better than he's playing this year. So they're pretty well on pace. All along, guys, I have felt they're going to surprise people. This is not a garbage team. And if Mike Glennon had worked out a little better, if Mike Glennon had just been bad, they might have won another game. He was awful. So, yeah, this is where I thought. And that said, I know I was talking with Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk, and I said, Mike, it would surprise me, but not stun me if Trubisky was starting opening day. Because what I had heard was they were very close to going with him. It was pretty much a split room, 50-50 on Trubisky over Glennon. And the reason was because the kid had played so well in the preseason. We looked at, you know, delay of game penalties, or this was kind of a bad throw, or didn't handle this snap or whatever. What they were looking at, the coaches and the front office were looking at decision-making. So I was hearing how much they were absolutely ecstatic about his development. They went with Glennon to give the kid even more time to develop, and Glennon had looked terrible. I mean, I looked bad in the Denver game, but so I did think he would be in based on performance. I mean, the reality is Mike Glennon being so immobile, it's kind of the Ichabod Crane of quarterbacks, that he would get crunched. And honestly, I hate to say it, but you know, injured or knocked out of the game for a while, that might bring Trubisky. And once the kid was in, he probably wouldn't give the job up. But in terms of performance, yeah. I mean, this after what I saw in preseason and what I knew, more important, what I knew they thought about him, I thought he would be in a lot sooner than a lot of people were thinking. Like, he's not going to sit out the whole year, and he didn't.
Yeah, and John, as you know, you see some of the same press conferences that I do, the offensive coaching staff, they just can't get over how well he's learning the system, how much progress he keeps making, and like you said, the decisions, throw the ball out, take the sack, as opposed to toss up the interception, has certainly helped mm-hmm. Mitch, and is going to, like you said, keep him in probably the remainder of the season. He's not giving up that job unless he gets hurt.
Yeah, and he is so mobile. I mean, knock on wood about that, but and see, I don't know who we remind you of, but I don't mean to put a comparison on him already. Physically, and the way he plays, the style is absolutely reminiscent of Favre. And I was covered the game that Favre began. It was I was covering the Bears then. You know, when he replaced Don Majkowski, they're about the same size. They're about 6'2", about 220. And you know, you see him up close. He's an athlete. This guy is, you know, he's an athlete. The only question with him would be what sport. This guy is an athlete, and that's the impression I have with Brett Favre. So physically, I don't know, not to say he's ever going to achieve that, but he's mobile. He's comfortable being flushed out of the pocket. He's actually as accurate outside on the run as he is in the pocket, which I think will be interesting to see what Ron Rivera and the Panthers do to keep him in the pocket. Remember, that was kind of always the book on Favre. You don't want to let him get outside, because then he extends the play, and now your DBs are having to cover five, six, 7 seconds, which you don't want. But, Trubisky's comfortable. And one big thing that people need to realize about this, and what's really impressive, clearly his development continued even as he was running the scout team. He was running the Packers, and he was running the Steelers plays, and he was probably doing things that the other team's quarterback couldn't do. I mean, the defensive guys were telling me how well he was playing. This is a guy who kept developing even when he wasn't running the Bears plays. And I think that's pretty impressive, as well as kind of a good commentary on Dave Ragone, the QB coach, and Dow Loggins, the O coordinator. Somebody's telling this kid good advice, and he's taking it. So I think you should be really heartened by what you saw there.
John Mullen, Comcast Sports Chicago. He was in Green Bay in 1992 when Don Majkowski goes out with an ankle injury and the birth of a legend occurs when Brett Favre throws the winning touchdown pass to Kittrick Taylor in the closing seconds of the game and beats the Cincinnati Bengals, and a legend was born. John, was that the highlight of your sports career?
No. For one, the highlight was, who is this Favre kid? You know, we still had to learn how to pronounce his name. Brett Favre, Favre. Yeah, if you remember going through that, I was like, who is this guy? That was, no, I it's an interesting question. What would be a highlight? I do remember maybe the single most memorable game was the Detroit versus the Bears at Detroit in 97, when Barry Sanders had one of those Barry Sanders days. And if there's one point in that game, I just put my pen down and I just quietly clapped. I said, man, I have seen something here. Had it been ballet, this would have been Baryshnikov. It was something like, oh man, what am I watching here? Favre wasn't quite that good when he started out.
Okay, John, if that's how you want to spin it. I just think that you're probably, being a Chicago guy, afraid to say that was your highlight ever. But that's okay.
It'll just be a little secret between you and I. I don't have a rooting interest. I'm not from Chicago originally. My team is the Steelers. Being in Pittsburgh when Bill Mazeroski hit the home run, and with John Henry Johnson and Buddy Dial and, you know, everybody,
the steel curtain,
even Bobby Lane late in his career. So no, I don't have a, I don't have that. No, that antipathy. I'm not an anti-Packer. So he just came out of nowhere. And I remember I went back and found a notebook I'd written, you know, about Favre and so forth. But remember, this was a guy that was a second round pick of the Falcons that Ron Wolf thought so much of that he traded a number one to the Falcons to get him. And by the way, just to hop back to Trubisky, I saw the text message that Ron Wolf, again, Hall of Famish GM, the guy who built the Packers, of that 90 fame, what he sent to Ryan Pace after Pace had traded up to get Trubisky, it was a long text, and it was incredibly complimentary. Point being, if Ron Wolf thinks you made a good deal, good chance you made a good deal.
All right, Steve?
Well, I think when the Bears are hoping that, you know, given the number of quarterbacks that they've suited up over the years and have started for this team, that they can get like the Packers have with two quarterbacks in the last, 20, 25 years?
Not right now. They're on another one, Steve, and we'll talk about that for about a minute with John in a second. But, John, go ahead and address that.
No, that's, I mean, we've all, Steve, you've been around. We covered the Nathan Enderle era, the Dan LeFever era. I mean, who can forget? Or maybe even the Will Fuhrer era. I mean, we've seen the great ones come and go, haven't we?
Eric Kramer, Jim Miller.
Eric Kramer was good and Jim Miller was good. You picked the wrong ones. The Cade McNowns of the world. Okay.
I talked to Cade a couple of weeks ago, by the way. It was interesting. He recalled, he was supposed to be the most NFL-ready guy. He was the Deshaun Watson of his era. This is the most NFL-ready guy coming out of college, and how they work out for the Bears, not too well.
Okay, John, now the Packers, of course, going with Brett Hundley from UCLA. They drafted him in the fifth round in 2015. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were saying that, you know, he's going to be up for another team looking at him, possibly a good contract in the NFL. Having studied under Mike McCarthy for 3 years, you know he wasn't going to be playing a whole lot in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers there. Now's his chance, okay? I know he hasn't had a lot of experience, but he played well in the preseason. Where do the Packers stand, in your opinion?
Not well. I mean, when Rodgers went out in after the Shea McClellan hit, I think they went 1-4 after that. There's a reason why these guys are backups. Now, that said, one thing that Green Bay had always done was keep somebody in the pipeline behind Favre or Rodgers. Mark Brunell. Yeah. What's his name? Favre? Anyway.
Even the commissioner screwed that up when he was drafted. But go ahead.
Absolutely. They did it right. They had the big dog in place, but every year they would take somebody like I said, here comes Mark Brunell in the fifth round. Here comes Ty Detmer,
Aaron Brooks,
Aaron Brooks, all these guys who would go on to be at least marginally okay or better
Matt
as starters.
Hasselbeck.
And that was the kind of that's the kind of guy that the Bears, when they had Cutler. Meanwhile, the Bears are taking Dan LeFever and Nathan Enderle. So, you know, that there's something in the general manager DNA up at Hallis Hall. They just haven't been able to find or a sixth rounder out of Michigan, let's say, you know, what's his name? Brady. That's the guy's name. Yeah, you got to get lucky with some of those too.
Okay. Yeah. His name's easy to pronounce. John Mullen, Comcast Sports, Chicago. He has been covering the Bears for one more year than Steve has. And they're long tenured guys in Chicago. Steve, you know, if you've done anything in the broadcast business, it's kind of linger around like mold.
Mildew and its odors.
You've been there. Okay. We respect you for that. And you too, John. Hey, John, thanks so much for coming on the program. Great info. You have a great day. And we'll be talking to you again soon.
All right, guys. Thanks again. Talk soon.
Coming back, we will talk Major League Baseball, NHL hockey, and more with our professor of sports, John Poulter from Toronto, on the Sports Report.
The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com. I'm Bob Terrell. Join us in 1986 on The Year in Sports. The best football team in the NFC was the New York Giants, quarterbacked by Phil Simms, who the next year would be named Super Bowl MVP. The Giants went on to win the Super Bowl over the AFC Denver Broncos 39-20. In NBA action, the Eastern Conference Boston Celtics defeated the Western Conference Houston Rockets 4-2, winning their 16th NBA championship. The 1986 Boston Celtics, which finished the regular season 67-15, is generally considered to be the best of Larry Bird's career. The 1986 World Series was a memorable battle between the New York Mets and the Boston Red Sox, which helped to spread the legend of the Curse of the Bambino to mass public awareness. New York Mets beat the Boston Red Sox, winning the series 4-3. And in hockey, it was the Edmonton Oilers winning the Stanley Cup, beating the Philadelphia Flyers 4-3 in the finals. I'm Bob Terrell. Thanks for joining us in 1986 on The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com.
Hey, Packer Dave, it's Pat Hughes of the Chicago Cubs. I was listening to an old Rod Stewart CD the other day, and for some reason, his lines reminded me of you when he said, "His body stunk, but he kept his funk." Nice talking to you, Packer Dave.
Okay, I guess thank you for that, Pat Hughes. I'm Packer Dave, along with Steve Leventhal. Pat Hughes is done for the year on Cubs Radio. And that's because the Dodgers bounced them 3-1 in that series. Let's hear from Dodgers pitcher Clayton Kershaw on going to the World Series.
Well, it feels good to hear World Series. It's been a long time coming for this team, and I'm kind of at a loss for words right now. I never thought in a million years I'd get to play in a World Series. So I know we got four more to go. I'm excited about it, but right now it's tough to sink in.
And now let's bring in from Toronto our professor of sports, John Poulter. And John, your thoughts on the Cubs, Dodgers, and the other series, the Yankees and the Astros, moving forward here. But first, let's talk about the Cubs and Dodgers.
Well, I think it was inevitable that the Cubs were going to come a cropper at some point in time. They had played very well the latter half of the regular season, but they'd been sort of dodging a tightrope every time you turned on the TV and watched them. I thought they were very fortunate to win Game 5 in Washington. There should have been a double play called when the base runner slid, in my mind anyway, slid out of the path, and that was the winning run in the 9-8 game. So as far as I'm concerned, the Cubs were very fortunate to get to the Dodger series, and once they got to the Dodger series, the Dodgers pitched, the Dodgers hit, and the Cubs really didn't do either. So I think the result is a fair one. Certainly that 11-1 game on Thursday night wasn't the way that we expected to see that series end. But certainly clear dominance on the part of the Dodgers, specifically Kershaw, 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. The only blemish, the home run to Chris Bryant in the 4th inning. So I think the right team won in terms of the ability that they were putting on the field. And certainly that's why they play the games. And the best team won in terms of the 5 games where the two teams were playing.
And John, that bullpen from the Dodgers was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I guess part of it is the fact that it's deep, it's strong. They addressed a couple of weaknesses at the trade deadline, specifically getting a couple of guys to get left-handed hitters out in Washington and Chicago, which were the two teams that they sort of expected they would have to go through one or both to get to the World Series. Both had good, strong left-handed hitting, so they chose to try and negate that. They clearly did a good job, and Kenley Jansen has been Kenley Jansen. And even Morrow has come through in a much different pitcher than we saw him in Seattle, and certainly the one that we saw in Toronto here. I think Brandon Morrow basically was one of the success stories of that Dodger bullpen. But top to bottom, pretty solid team, Steve.
All right, John. Now, what about the series here that's still in progress?
Well, that's a peculiar series as well, because it's been a home field advantage series so far. Houston winning the first two games in Houston 2-1, and then the Yankees being relatively dominant in the 3 games in New York City. Certainly games 3 and 5 were very, very one-sided in favor of the Yankees. And I think if Houston loses this series, they're going to point to that Game 4 where they were up 4-0 and they were dominating the game. They were playing extremely well. They were getting timely hits. They were up 4-0, I believe, as late as the 7th inning. and looking to take a 3-1 lead and go back to Houston at the very worst with a 3-2 lead, but with an opportunity to clinch it in New York on Wednesday night with a win in Game 5. But they fell apart, and the Yankees came back and won, and I think that gave them the momentum in Game 5. And now all of a sudden the Astros are in that famous do-or-die situation. But, boy, they got Justin Verlander going for them on Friday night. And if you have a game that is a must-win situation, you couldn't ask for a better guy to have on the mound. And certainly that's one of the reasons that they got a guy like Justin Verlander. So that is going to be a very exciting situation. And I think we're heading for a Game 7 there. And who knows, on Saturday night in Game 7, almost anything can happen, because it'll be all hands on deck for both teams.
Okay, John, let's move on to hockey. The season is underway. And from the Blackhawks, let's hear from Duncan Keith.
Well, I mean, 4-on-3 in overtime, but I don't know. We did some good things, but obviously not good enough. We need to find a way to get a win against that team. And, maybe their confidence wasn't as high as it has been. Just need to find a way to get a win there. I got to overtime, but stuff on 4-on-3.
All right, so John, they're not really starting out of the chute too well. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, they started out very well in terms of the first two or three games. They looked like they were the Blackhawks of old, but certainly the last three or four games they've been struggling big time. And certainly in that comment from Keith, you can understand how despondent he is, and clearly he has to be careful about what he says, from a public relations standpoint. But I got the impression from the comments that he made, and let's be clear that. That was right after an overtime loss at the United Center to Edmonton on Thursday night. So he was probably a little bit down. They caught him at a bad moment. But quite frankly, you didn't get the impression that it was a very confident bunch of guys. And the two games they've lost in the last couple of nights have been a little bit alarming, because one of them was against a division rival in St. Louis, and they were clearly outclassed in that game. St. Louis fully deserving of that win. And then on Thursday night, the game in Chicago, Edmonton going into the game, I think, was 29th overall in the league. Certainly not where we expected to see Edmonton, but at the start of the game, they were in 29th place. So you had to think that was a game that the Blackhawks felt they could have won and should have won. And when they can only score one goal in a game like that at the United Center, you have to wonder just what kind of problems the Blackhawks have. But boy, they got to get that thing rolling pretty quickly, because St. Louis is in first place. And although Minnesota, which to me is probably the best team in that division, is sitting behind Chicago, Minnesota is one of those teams that's only played four games, and some of the other teams have played 7 and 8. So Minnesota have those games in hand, so it's important that the Blackhawks start winning again.
All right, Steve, and we've got a couple of big games in soccer. Let's take 1 minute and talk about this.
All right, well, to my mind, John, the biggest game, of course, is Tottenham hosting Liverpool. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think that's one of the big games, Steve. Liverpool certainly looked very good last week against Manchester United. Spurs starting to play very well, but they still seem to be struggling a little bit at their temporary home in Wembley. But with all due respect, I disagree with you on what's the biggest game of the week. I think the biggest game of the week is number 5 Chelsea against number 4 Watford at Stamford Bridge on Saturday. I think that's the biggest game, because if Watford can put on a good show there, it will indicate that they are able to play with some of those big boys. We all expected Chelsea to be in the top 5, but we'd have said Watford in the top 5 at the start of the season. I think some of us might have gotten some funny looks, but Watford has been playing very well, and if for some reason or other they can pull off a win or even a draw at Stamford Bridge, I think that'll give them a tremendous amount of confidence and show that they are actually a pretty good quality team.
All right, John Poulter, our professor of sports from Toronto, will do it again next week. Thank you, and we'll be talking to you then.
You betcha. Thanks, guys. Take care, and we'll chat next week.
Okay, now Steve and SRN broadcasting contributor Mike Perlow touch on fantasy football.
Once again, we are going to have our fantasy football picks with our expert Mike Perlow. And Mike, let's start out with the quarterback and what matchups make that a good pick for us.
I'm looking at the the Atlanta New England lineup, and this one is just really hitting me as the money game this week. This is where I think we're going to see points put up on the board by both teams. Defenses have been struggling on both sides. Matt Ryan, I think, is an obvious call here, but don't lose sight of Tom Brady either. You never want to not consider Tom Brady, although he is the top dollar option this week. If you're looking to save a little bit of money, I'd look at Marcus Mariota, who's been up and coming as of late. He got over his injury, and he's got Cleveland coming up this week.
What about the game on Monday night, Washington and Philadelphia? Any love there for either Wentz or Cousins?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think that will be a high-scoring affair, too. I think when we look at both of those teams, their running games are very suspect, if even existent. So I would say Wentz and Cousins are very good options.
All right, so who are we going with then, running back?
And looking at the slate this week, there's not a lot that excites me. We have been riding the Leonard Fournette train. Now, Fournette, he's questionable, and he hasn't practiced at least through Thursday. I'm afraid to throw him out there this week, frankly. There's been some Ezekiel Elliott news out there, and I like what I've seen out of Ezekiel Elliott. I think he wants to put this behind him once and for all. Latest news, injunction lifted, injunction put back on. We're at a point now where Ezekiel Elliott is expected to play on Sunday, and I look for him to have a big game against the 49ers.
All right, who are some other running backs we should be looking at?
I like Jay Ajayi. He's been getting major workload. He's got the Jets at home this week, so I really like Ajayi at home. And another sneakier pick could be Deion Lewis. Again, looking at that Atlanta-New England game, it seems like Lewis has taken Gillislee's spot both inside the 5-yard line as well as between the 20s. Seeing a lot more action, a lot more snaps on Gillislee lately. And Atlanta absolutely is suspect against the run.
Okay, let's get some wide receivers.
I like Jordy Nelson, and some people might look at that and say, are you crazy? Aaron Rodgers broke his collarbone. He's got a guy by the name of Brett Hundley throwing him the ball. But keep in mind that they're still going up against New Orleans, and I think Brett Hundley is going to link himself onto a guy like Jordy Nelson as a dependable receiver that he can find open and connect with. I look for Nelson to have a decent game. The other side of that ball in the same game, Steve, I like Michael Thomas. New Orleans has been connecting on offense as of late as they came off their bye week. And Green Bay, it has not been that great. And I think that they've been suspected giving up points. And I look for Michael Thomas.
What about Antonio Brown against Cincinnati?
You can never go wrong with Antonio Brown. My concern there, honestly, is that I think they're going to run the ball a lot. I really do. I think that Pittsburgh is going to get back to the basics a little bit. One of the stud receivers, though, that hasn't seen a lot of end zone action yet this season, who I do think is going to have a big game, is Julio Jones. He's going to be facing off against a New England secondary that has not proven they can cover anybody. I look for Julio to go off.
All right, who do you like in the tight ends, not named Kelsey?
Actually, I'm liking a guy named Jimmy. I like Jimmy Graham this week. If you take a look at the New York Giants' first five games in a row, they gave up a tight end touchdown. I look for Russell Wilson to connect with Jimmy Graham, and I look for Jimmy Graham to bring at least one into the end zone this weekend.
So let's jump to the defense. Who do you think is going to put up some numbers? Who do you think might be good for some fumbles, sacks, interceptions, pick sixes?
You can't look too much further than Seattle. They're the number one ranked defense this week as they face off against the Giants. Although I'll tell you, the Giants sure surprised the Broncos last week. I think if you want to save a little bit of money and go beyond your Jacksonville's and your Denver's, take a look at Miami. Miami's facing off against the Jets this week, and I just have a feeling that when they go interdivisional and Miami's at home, and they're just going to pound the Jets. I look for Miami to have a nice game on the D side of the ball.
All righty, Mike, thanks a lot. We'll see how we do.
All right. Take care, Steve.
And that was Steve Leventhal and Mike Perlo on Fantasy Football. Want to thank you all for listening to this edition of the Weekend Sports Report. Remember, you can get us at internetfm.com and kwwradio.com. New shows posted Friday afternoons. So, for Steve Leventhal, for John Poulter from Toronto, for Mike Perlo, for John Mullen from NBC Sports in Chicago, I'm Packer Dave saying thanks a lot for listening. Have a great week. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Get some bears, scumbag.
Goodbye.
Tell you what, Dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt. Pucker up, Buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, Fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless. Now you're to club them and eat their bones.
Goodbye.
Now you ladies, carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.